It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the latest and greatest in data breaching and overreaching. This is Access of Easy. This week, we're talking TikTok, among other things. I know. What else is new? I can say that probably every week. What's going on, buddy? Good to see you. Len is in the other panel, everyone. What's I assume you're not a short form content enjoyer, given the laughter there.
No, I don't really watch much short form. I do get the odd one on YouTube, but I don't go through maybe like a couple a day, maybe. It's got to be something of real interest for me.
Yeah.
And whatever. So nothing interests me these days. I'll be honest, nothing interests me these days. I'm just nose to the grindstone, getting ready.
This is getting ready for the coming fallout here. Yeah. No doubt about that.
Oh, you see it. Like we have this budget coming out, and
we were talking before the show about the Canadian budget and the likelihood that that thing just destroys the value of the currency and the global view of our economy. If it's not destroyed already, certainly we're getting closer. Anyways, we got lots for you guys tonight. Last week's quote, though, as always, politics is the art of looking for trouble, finding it wherever it exists or not, whether it exists or not, I should say, diagnosing it incorrectly and applying the wrong remedy. That was by Ernest Benn. And Les L. got it again. He gets it. Congrats, Les. This week's quote, in politics, stupidity is not a handicap. If you know who that was by, make sure you put it in the comments. Don't forget that you can only read the fine print on the back of the batteries for your TV remote when you're finding an answer, searching for the answer. No Googling allowed. Put it in the comments and you get your next round of renewals on EasyDNS, which you can't beat. TikTok, 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 TikTok. Another, sort of deal, half deal, partial deal. I don't know what you want to call it, but something to talk about anyway. Something to talk about. Yeah, we should. I mean, it's the headliner.
All right, let's talk. I mean, this is not the first time that we've gone through this song and dance, right? Like the sale of TikTok going to Oracle too, right? Like it's not like the first time we've heard. This is like rinse and repeat, but maybe it's going to work this time, maybe not. But anyways, United States government, they've been on this for some time. They've been eyeing TikTok with some concern because of the connection between ByteDance, as the people behind TikTok, and the Chinese government. And the concern that the U.S. has is that Chinese law states that ByteDance could be forced to hand over data to private information that they've accumulated to the Chinese government. This would be information that they would have accumulated on American users. And the thought was that China, they could then use, or they already have been, and they're going to continue to use the algorithm and to spread propaganda. They've been doing this for some time, right? Like it's not something new. And this propaganda potentially, and it has influenced American users out there. Just go look to see what happened with Charlie Kirk and all the people that are happy that he passed away. And you can see that, geez, this influence and propaganda stuff really does work. And so the United States government are trying to force the sale of TikTok to American investors, American companies, a group of American companies, one including to be Oracle. So this framework deal has been reached apparently, but there's a little bit of a snag here because they still say that the algorithm, that's the stuff that really makes up, that's the app, right? That's really it. Mm-hmm. China is considering that this algorithm is a key piece of technology and doesn't want to sell it completely. They say that they would license the algorithm to a new US-based company, but that means still China would have control over the technology. And that means that, you know what, there's not going to be no change in the end, even though that the company could be owned by a conglomerate of US companies, still with the algorithm being controlled by China. Doesn't do very much. It doesn't solve the problem. We're just basically back to square one. So looks like they're at a standoff with this one. And this Oracle thing, Oracle, weren't they going to be buying TikTok a couple of years ago? This is not the first time they stepped up their plate.
Yeah.
What happened with that one? Why did that one get derailed? I suspect maybe it's going to happen again, right? Like strike two this time. We'll see if there's going to be a strikeout.
What's at the core of the US government's desire to have TikTok divest from the company or ByteDance divest from the company to continue US operations? What is it?
They are happier to see this controlled by a US
by this company. You mean the algo?
Yeah. So I guess that's going to make them happy, but doesn't really change anything. Like, let's be honest, Facebook/Instagram is the same thing, just controlled by Zuckerberg and crew, right?
I'm glad you brought that up. The story really does focus on Oracle and Ellison being the big money behind this, but the other names on the docket I think are as important or more important in at least one instance. Andreessen Horowitz, A16Z, is a company that has had their hand in a number of startups over the years. They're a tech incubator, they're a angel investor, you know. Mark Andreessen is the guy who's got, you know, every conehead meme on the internet. He's got just a terrible shaped head, the poor guy. I don't feel too bad for him because he's got, you know, billions and billions of dollars. But do you really think that a company that's run by Andreessen Horowitz, who, by the way, also owns or invested in or seeded or incubated, tell me if any of these companies ring a bell and if you trust these companies with your data or your algorithm, Airbnb, Coinbase, Facebook, Instagram, Instacart, Lyft, Oculus, Pinterest, Roblox, Slack, Skype. Do you think a company that had a hand in all those pies is going to suddenly find ethic, you know, the holy ethic, when they start running or have a hand in running the TikTok algorithm on the American side?
No, it's going to be par for the course for those
people. I mean, come on. Like, what are we talking about here? It's so obvious. You're just picking between two poisons and deciding who's going to put the knife in your rib cage if you're a young person or someone who's addicted to the algorithm scroll. I find this so disingenuous. And Larry Ellison, you know, I don't trust any 80-year-old who's had that much cosmetic surgery either. You seen Larry Ellison? He looks very young and sounds good too. I'm sure he's had some kind of vocal cord work done or is working on his vocal cords some other way. These people are not to be trusted. Any of them are not to be trusted. And I don't know why, you know, the criticism should not be China keeps the algorithm. The criticism should be, it doesn't matter who's running the algorithm. If these are the two options, these are two sides of the same coin. So, you know, Ars Technica, which usually gets it right, to be honest with you, I think gets this wrong in a big way.
I have nothing to add, and I'm just shocked that we're going through this song and dance again.
Wow, this is what keeps us employed over here, TikTok.
No, there's so much more than just that. and the direction that TikTok is sending the country, both the United States and Canada, there's more to it than that. Like the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, their data hub flaws. This is an amazing story, by the way. The DHS, they had a major issue with one of their computer systems, and that's a data hub. And there was a recent software update that caused a mistake in the security system. Now, keep in mind, DHS, what type of data they have. So if there's a flaw that's been discovered, this could be pretty bad. It accidentally led up to 5,000 people who were not supposed to see classified information look at it. And the information that they did see was accidentally shared, like things like reports on counterterrorism and border security. Now, I can't believe they're doing this, but the outsourcing. This was a error on this, how the system was set up, because they have a third party company, a third party platform that they have employ here, and it has weak security controls, and that allowed people to get around normal protocols and around the protection. So Wired analysis revealed that the third party vendor platform had, this is incredible, known vulnerabilities unpatched for over a year. DHS.
Wait a minute. Why is it incredible? Every third party platform we talk about on this show has these problems. If you outsource, what happens?
For over a year, Joey. Over a year. And then DHS, they found out about the problem a few months after it started, and now they're looking to see what's happened. And if people had little trust in government agencies before, I think now it's going to change. They're going to find a new bottom, a new scraping of the bottom of the barrel. Think of all the information DHS has. They should be very careful with this information and ensure that just not clicking the wrong thing on data, that this stuff is secured and only people that should see it, not letting anybody look at it. Just, you know, it's another reminder out there that somebody and some people, they have access to a ton of data and they could easily make mistakes on that. And what happens is your digital security is at risk. DHS, terrible stuff by them.
Now, I don't know if you've seen the follow-up, but I'll put it here on the YouTube side. This is the DHS response. They're offering, this is a picture of a DHS agent offering free credit monitoring to someone who's affected by the data leak, maybe a terrorist in this case. Do they still offer free credit monitoring to terrorists, even if they're the they're part of the leaked data? I don't know.
They should give them like 1 year free of filing with the IRS or something.
Get out of jail free card. If they bring you in, you get, they give you a 20-second head start. You get, you can run away as fast as you can, like game of hide and seek or something. I don't know. Like, you know, I keep on hearing from every American politician that we're at like DEFCON 1 or whatever. Is DEFCON 1 or DEFCON 5? I don't know. But the highest level of concern for foreign actors and people are rigging their elections, and we have to be aware of domestic terrorism. And, you know, there's threats at every there's threats on every corner of the street and every corner of the internet, every corner of your neighborhood. And this is what they're doing behind the scenes. Outsourcing to a third party who's had unpatched vulnerabilities for a year. They don't take what they're saying seriously. So why should you take what they're saying seriously? That's a question. That is a question that needs to be answered, I think, in a lot of different silos. But since we're talking about DHS data, like that's significant. That's a significant reputational hit, if you're paying attention, of course, which many Americans probably are not. The funny thing, Len, is that I don't know if you noticed in the Wired story, Wired usually puts stuff like that behind a paywall. Do you know why that one was free?
Ah, no.
Because it was all FOIA information. Yes. So anything Wired gets through Freedom of Information, they generally put out for free. So not only was the leak, like the number of problems here, okay? The leak was bad. The outsourcing of the service was bad. And then also they didn't tell anybody, but it was available through Freedom of Information request if you made one. You can't beat this. This is a three strike moment here for DHS.
So apparently it's $25 to do those Freedom of Information
cheap
act requests. It's not too bad.
What's that, about 100 Canadian? How much is that Canadian? 100, 110?
Somewhere around there. There's no initial cost. That's for the first 2 hours of the search time, but beyond that, it looks like it's $25. An absolute steal, if you ask me. And it begs the question, has DHS, are they too long in the tooth? Have they expired in terms of what they were trying to achieve? This is more a response out of 9/11, right?
DHS, I think they were obviously around before 9/11, were they not?
I thought it was a response.
I never even thought to look into that, but maybe.
So I'm thinking they outlived their usefulness. More
perhaps,
than
like, perhaps, yeah.
Whatever. Let's talk about this awful, awful name, Shiny Hunters.
This isn't awful. We've talked about these guys before. This is a Pokemon reference. I like this reference.
I don't think it's good. Well, anyways, this hacker group out there, they have claimed to stole a large amount of customer data from high-end fashion brands, and the companies impacted are Gucci, Alexander McQueen, and crap like that. And they all roll up to a parent company called Kering? I never heard of this company before. It's German, I'm guessing. Kering?
Anyways. Must be.
So the stolen information is said to include personal information like customers' names, their email addresses, phone numbers, and addresses. And they claim to have taken records of how much money customers have spent in those luxury stores. There's a Bitcoin connection to this too. I'll get to that in a moment. And the parent company, Kering, whatever it's called, they acknowledged that the security incident did exist. But this is not the first time that Shiny Hunter Group was involved in a major theft. They've been doing this quite a few times, and they have believed to have stolen quite a few records with just from Gucci alone. So they've been going back to this well a few times. Now, the hacker contacted them back in early June, and they claim to on Telegram. I can't believe they were reached out on Telegram.
I know. I love that. BBC is messaging hackers on Telegram.
They've been in on and off negotiations, but over a ransom that's going to have to be paid in Bitcoin. Nothing has been stated yet if there has been any payment made. Now, keep in mind, the $5 wrench attack is very much applicable here. If you are spending any money in these stores, you are most likely part of the, not even a 1%, 1% of 1%. Yeah. Let's be perfectly honest here. And if they know how much you're spending on top of that, it's like one thing if somebody goes into Gucci store and gets just a bag for $1,500. It's another thing if you're going to get a whole bunch of things for 25 grand. And if they know X person has spent 5-6 figures in these stores, well, they have a lot of money that they have to throw around. And you know what? They're just prime for the picking for one of those $5 wrench attacks. So I hope that they live in gated communities. I hope that they have good enough security guards and they haven't drowned in some low pool like that. What happened? Was it Obama's security? No, it was this chef. Either way.
Chef.
Yeah, don't let your chef go swimming late at night in shallow waters. I hope these guys are well protected because they could potentially be subjected to these attacks. They could be brutal if that happens.
I don't have much else to say about this, but I agree with everything you mentioned there about a target on your back. I mean, you're already a mark in my view if you're spending money on these brands. But man, if you have your data as part of a data leak and these guys have like your address, your credit card number, whatever else, look out, look out. Do not envy these people. What's the most expensive pair of shoes you have, Len? Balenciaga shoes, I think, are, you know, some of them are five figures. What is the most expensive pair of shoes you own?
I think it's like $1.25.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Tennis shoes?
Yeah.
Yeah. What brand? Do you mind me asking?
ASICS.
Nice. Yeah, ASICS are great. My most expensive shoes are New Balance Runners. They were like, I think, 2 and change, but man, are they comfortable. Those
and
big
I still haven't
stacks.
Opened them. I
still, really?
I'm still using my old and my old tennis shoes. They have a slight tear in it. And until it, I am notorious for this. We'll talk about this more on Monday. I got a beauty to show you guys all on Monday show. It's, one thing I am is I'm willing to save some money to buy more corn. But anyways, in terms of saving corn, one thing you should do is make sure you don't use one of these wallets, these software wallets that are exposed to the MPM packages. And we talked about this a little bit last week, I think. At the very least, we'll go a little bit further this week. And these NPM packages are pre-made blocks of code, and it just simplifies building applications. And it's I'm going to put it on the same par as Canadian government doing those $3 million prefab homes, trying to bring them to market. It's kind of like that. Make them quick, make them easy. In that case, it's expensive. That's what an NPM package is, just to quickly to get stuff out to market. And so hackers, they tricked a developer, maintainer, into giving up their account details. And with that, they were able to sneak in malicious code into popular packages that are downloaded billions of times in a week. And the malicious code was something that is very specific. It is a crypto stealer, what they call it. And it's specifically designed to target people who use cryptocurrency, stuff like MetaMask and stuff like that. These wallets that are hot wallets on your computer, then somebody with a compromised application, if they try to make a transaction on their web browser, the bad code would then secretly change the destination, sending the money to the attacker instead, rather than the address you want to send it to. Mm-hmm. And the victim thinks everything is normal until they do a little bit more investigating and realize, geez, it didn't end up in the address I wanted to send it to. All the more reason for a couple of things. Number one, don't deal with these altcoins. Secondly, don't deal with these soft or these hot wallets, these wallets that are on your browser and crap like that. Use one of those hardware devices, something that's trusted like a cold card. When you are signing your transaction, it has no interaction with the internet aside from the SD card or the QR card the QR code in which you are interfacing with the computer. That's the way to properly do things. I have nothing else to add.
Me neither. You're 100% true there again. You're batting 1,000 tonight. I can't believe people are still using. I mean, sometimes I think that we're in this kind of bubble, you and I, especially because we do this show and the Bitcoin show, where what should be obvious to everybody is really only obvious to us because we see it so often on both sides of things. And we've dealt with wallets and seen hacks and It's obviously not the case though, then. People are still picking convenience over security, even as the price of some of these things really does rip into the hundreds of thousands, you know, in Bitcoin's case. If that's not enough to make you secure your assets in a way that's safe and separate from risk and threat, then I don't know what will be. You know, what's the price where we're going to stop seeing these things? I'm not sure there is one.
Not until everybody's drained and all that ends up on Coinbase. Yeah. Centralized in Coinbase. All right, this file fix attack, this is the final story of this week's show. Unless you got an added one, I'll be happy to talk
about it. Jaden Daniels' knee injury, but I don't think that's, we can't really stick that
sports?
In. Sports ball.
Which
sport? Okay. It's the Redskins quarterback, but anyway, we don't have to worry about that.
Hopefully he comes back quick. Redskins, what are they still back as Redskins, or then it's still the Commanders?
Commanders.
I listened to
this is great. We're a short show today anyway, so we'll just make this sidebar here. I listened to local Washington radio for my Redskins commentary. It's the best. And every single host there, including the ESPN AM radio hosts in Washington, call them the Redskins. Yeah. No one calls them the Commanders. So make of that what you will. You can change the name all you want. The same way that, you know, Skydome is always going to be Skydome, and you know, Air Canada Center is never going to be whatever it is now, you know, Bell Rogers Chalet. I don't know what they're calling it, but those names don't change. Ivor Wynn in Hamilton is never going to be Tim Hortons Field, right? So there you go.
I still called Beijing Peking.
What, the city?
Yeah, I'm kidding.
Okay.
Peking was the old name. In fact,
I didn't know that.
In Italian, it's still called Peking. They don't call it Beijing in Italian. Nice. They haven't switched it for whatever reason. I don't know why. Anyways, file fix attack. Let's talk about that. And it's a type of, this is interesting, it's a type of cyber attack. And it's considered unique because it takes over a computer's memory into tricking the system into running malicious code. And this usually happens, malicious code is usually run when a virus or malware is put on a file on a computer and is run. So how file fix attack, this is different because it works by corrupting an application's memory while the program is running. So rather than actually being in the file itself, it is corrupting the application's memory, and that's how it's running. So it's because of that, it makes it harder to detect with standard searches, standard security software, because for obvious reasons, those are looking what's in actual files rather than in the memory. And the attack targets how a computer memory is organized. So when an application runs, it runs in a certain amount of memory. And file fix attacks and exploits a weakness in how the memory is used and overwriting a small part of it. And then the corrupted memory could then be used to load and run malicious code, giving an attacker control of the system. And the tricky part here is that the malware isn't saved as a file in a computer. It only exists in the computer's RAM. So once the computer is rebooted, the malicious code that once resided in RAM is now gone. And so that's giving investigators headaches to locate it. And the attack could be brutal because it could bypass many security defenses. Most antivirus programs and security tools, they have no idea how to deal with this type of threat. And this is a kind of a fileless attack. And it's apparently this is a growing trend. And countries like US, Philippines, Bangladesh, Tunisia, Dominican Republic, Germany, a whole bunch, they're all reporting a rise in this type of attack. And for those wondering, now, how does this attack a system? It requires some input by the user. So normally when a user has to do something, they have to download a file, run it, and then, you know, that the malware is off to the races. But in this one, this requires a little bit of intervention by the user. For example, phishing websites on Facebook security. So think of the average user on Facebook.
Yeah.
And so they go on Facebook and they get some sort of phishing site, and the site informs them that their account was reported and it's going to be suspended in 1 week's time. So they don't want this to happen. So they action it by clicking the appeal button. And what happens is a PowerShell code is then copied from Explorer to the clipboard, and then it's off to the races, and then it runs the malicious code in the memory and it's gone. So it's taking advantage of people that do not understand phishing websites. That's basically it. if nobody was able to intervene, if nobody was, I'm going to say, stupid enough or uneducated enough to click on something they shouldn't click, a website,
yeah,
they would have never been attacked in the first place. It's a nasty attack, but still, it doesn't happen on its own. There's got to be some intervention by the user. And in this case, we're talking about the average Facebook user. Their elbows are up, but their computer is taking a beating at the same time. So I don't have much sympathy for them.
Len, what are corporate IT security teams going to do for work once the boomers retire?
Oh, they're going to have nothing to do.
They're going to, like, this is such a boomer attack vector. What are these people going to do when everyone over 55 is gone from the workforce?
My start bar is gone. I don't know. They probably get those still today. It's missing.
I can't get out of full screen. What do I do? I can't see my navigation bar. This is the kind of people that are getting hit by these attacks. Like, if you read through the story, it's like, okay, you're clicking stuff, you're putting stuff in your address bar. I mean, come on. We can't help these people. Some people can't be helped. Isn't that the case? Isn't that what we should infer from this?
It goes beyond that. Those are the people that are pulling the strings in the economy. Let's be perfectly honest here. It's maybe a few of
they're setting digital policy, setting economic policy.
Right. And you wonder why things are going the way they are. They have no idea how to properly turn off the computer. They just unplug it from the wall. It's a Commodore 64.
As soon as anything suspicious happens, just blow the breaker and hope for the best, I guess. See what happens. That's it, everyone. Thanks for coming.
Rotary phones at home.
me and Len will be back next week for more in the world of data security with the latest and greatest in data breach and overreach. And don't forget, sign up for the newsletter, the podcast, and the YouTube channel as well. There's always more stories than what we cover. So if you're looking for that, we got it for you over on accessofeasy.com. Until next time, take care of yourself. Take care.